Lots of stuff going on today. We are glad that you're here with us on Dukes and Bell. Tomorrow, we're at Twin Peaks and Buckhead, 2 until 7. We've been talking about this story today that has come out in regards to Georgia. And Eddie Grand, who was the, continues to be right now until he takes his job, if he does, assistant head coach of offense and running backs for Kentucky football, has been offered the job. And those are the various reports that were out there from different sources for Georgia. Kirby Smart apparently 24 hours ago offered him the job. Now we are hearing what?
WKYT Television up in Lexington is going off a tweet. This is how the world works these days. Apparently sent from a certified or verified account from Eddie Grand. Or is it? They're running with this right now, saying these all in BBN, Big Blue Nation, let's do this. So this is a TV station in Kentucky, which is saying, but I can't confirm that this is the man's actual Twitter account. A Sea of Blue, also another Kentucky website, saying Eddie Grand sticks with the Kentucky Wildcats. And WYMT says they're sticking with the story that Georgia has offered him the position. So the news out of Lexington is confusing, but Eddie Grand, 30-year veteran in around the college wars, earlier today reported to be offered the Georgia OC job by Kirby Smart.
Smiley, appreciate that, sending that to us, man. Listen, it's a fluid story. It could happen here in the next 30 minutes. It could happen in the next, 30 hours. Who knows as to how soon this is going to take place. But, Mike, you would think, okay, and I brought this up a little bit earlier. We've got our top three at six coming up. But you would think that for Eddie Grand, who, is going to get basically a raise, was offered, I think, $1.1 million to come be the OC at Georgia, that this would make sense. I don't know. People talk about lateral moves. Well, where Georgia is currently, the team to beat in the East, and the team that's playing for SEC championships, Kentucky's ascending, but they're not there yet. You would think that this would be the situation, but you never know.
Well, our good buddy Seth Emerson from The Athletic about a half hour ago saying he doesn't think anything is imminent with Eddie Grand and the Georgia offensive coordinator job. He says, in fact, he would be surprised if it happened at this point. So earlier today, multiple websites, and again, these are CBS Sports actually had it earlier too, so I don't want you to think we're reading this from like joesmomsbasement.com. But I mean, multiple reports had him taking the gig. Now, tap the brakes on this as everybody's looking for the scoop, but not maybe everybody has the facts.
All right, so here's the question then. If Eddie Grand does not take this job, and now we kind of figure out that Kirby is going out of house, because if he wanted to hire and elevate Coley, he could have done that, right? So then he's going to go out of house. He's going to go somewhere else to get his next coordinator.
Yeah, I mean, because, James Coley's a guy. It's not a lightning rod, but there's certainly he's polarizing. We got a lot of dog fans are not excited about the option of him becoming the OC. I think Miami fans, I know John Michaels has talked about it. He was part of Al Golden, which none of that was good down there in South Florida. But Jimbo Fisher was interested in bringing James Coley to Texas A&M when he got the gig. And I presume that's why he got the bump in salary and an added line on his business card, right, to stay at Georgia last year.
Yeah. Hey, coming up in 20 minutes, guys, Bruce Feldman from Fox Sports. He also writes for The Athletic. Great conversation about all the stuff that's going on in and around college football today. You'll hear that coming up here on the program in about 20 minutes. Right now, though, let's get to the top three.
Time for Dukes and Bell, top three. The top three stories of the day.
Can I count it off?
And before we get to the top three, just real quick, with the success the Dogs are having, right, you would think that most guys would be willing to take this job in a heartbeat, right? That's at least the notion you believe, like, oh, he's going to get offered. He's going to take the job immediately. I'm just sitting here thinking about this because Sam Tarley's like, okay, if that happens, if in fact he turns the job down, what does that say? It's a little bit surprising, I'll be honest.
Well, I mean, look, guys get, buyer's remorse. I mean, Bobby Kremers was going to leave Georgia Tech and then, go to South Carolina. We've had this happen before. Remember, down in Florida with Billy Donovan famously going to Orlando to come back. And honestly, wasn't really the same in Florida after that. But so in the case of this coach who's been around forever, Eddie Grand, I got to be honest, it was not the most compelling name. When you heard it, it's similar to what, I've got to be honest, what Chaney was when you first heard about Coach Chaney. In the sense, and for guys that are, I know sometimes a vernacular doesn't apply for younger folks, journeyman means a guy that's been in a million spots. A guy who's been around. If you're the man, for instance, Venerables may die at Clemson, but that's his the one job he's had. Other guys, they bounce around from team to team. That's where this guy would be.
All right, top three. Story number one is the Falcons, guys. Kyle Flood is now going to handle our clock management strategy, challenges, our timeouts for our Falcons. And again, Dan Quinn still has to throw the flag. The point is, though, that he's got somebody paying attention to those things. This is something we've talked about on this show a lot. Dan Quinn today, addressing the media, talked about this position for Kyle Flood.
Yeah, Kyle, in that role,
will certainly assist me in a number of those areas in our preparation and in-game as well, including replay, including game and, you know, some clock things. That'll be a big part of his role for sure.
Okay. I like it. This is not a knock on Coach Quinn. Oh, he can't handle it. Coaches around the NFL are doing this. It's a smart play. There's so much going on in these games, guys. There's so many moving parts. You know, and we say this, if it doesn't matter if your attention to detail is there. Mm-hmm. You still, Mike, sometimes might be consumed with things. And you took this back to the Super Bowl, you know, when he took the defense over. I think it's a great analogy.
I mean, Shanahan is out there. I mean, look, Dan was not watching the game, but, I mean, sometimes, you know, you do get tunnel vision or you're caught up in the moment, or maybe he was talking to his defense because the defense was hemorrhaging points at that point. Julio makes that catch on the sideline, and we've got less than 5 minutes to win our first championship. And there's just no big picture awareness to say somebody from, you know, hey, guys, just run the ball, eat clock, kick a field goal, and we're done. They kept that pedal to the metal that was their MO, and it didn't work. I mean, I know hindsight's 20/20, but everybody on the planet knew what was going on at that moment, except, unfortunately, our coaching staff.
So Kyle Flood, who's been here, assistant offensive line coach over the last couple of years, so it's somebody that maybe you didn't even pay attention to, but he's been here. They're familiar with him. He's going to do this now, and I think it's a good move by Coach Quinn. Hey, the other thing, though, that Dan Quinn talked about was all the hires, especially on the offensive side, have been former head coaches. And, Mike, you said there's a lot of brain power in that room now.
Yeah, you got three head coaches on the staff, Raheem Morris, Mike Mularkey, and now Dirk Cutter.
Here is Coach Quinn talking about hiring former head coaches as coordinators.
Experience, for sure, it's a factor, but there's usually something else there that goes with it. In Mike's regard, you know, like the excellence that he's shown in the run game and the toughness that his teams have played with. In Dirk's case, yeah, he's got plenty of experience, but it was the explosive nature and how they did the similarities and how they attack and a very clear vision of how to utilize our personnel in that same way. Experience, yes. Contrarian, yes. But at the end of the day, you know, what will this person dial and attitude bring to the team?
You need different voices.
Now, Dan Quinn was asked that question about a couple weeks ago by Jeff Schultz. This was before the final week of the season. And Schultz, he asked him, he needs more contrarian viewpoints, maybe, you know, sounding board, et cetera. And Dan did admit that, yes, perhaps he needed that. I asked you earlier in the 5 o'clock hour, do you think Arthur Blank suggested this?
It's very possible, Mike.
I mean, just a thought. I mean, because
remember when I asked you, though, who does Arthur Blank go to when it's time to say, all right, I'm going to do another analysis of my football team? When you totally have bought into the head coach and the general manager says what he said, who else in the building do you go to? And I ask this question not being a jerk. I'm just being honest. Arthur Blank, when he makes the phone call to Dan Quinn and Dan Quinn says, da 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 da, does Arthur Blank hang up the phone and go, all right, that's great.
Right.
But I also need some checks and balances in the building. So I don't know if this came from Arthur. I actually and honestly believe that Dan Quinn and his self-evaluation is listening to people. That's okay. It's good. I think he heard people say, you know what? It'd be nice to probably do this clock management thing and have somebody aware of it. Dan Quinn paid attention.
Right.
Hey, coach, you hired a guy that didn't have any play calling experience, and you paid for it over the last couple of seasons, and now he's not here.
But the ultimate irony is this year he actually did a nice job when you consider how limited you were with your options. No run game. You know, you had a great offense, you know, when you could protect Matt Ryan. It's pretty interesting because – I just wish you had a guy like Napier a year ago. You know, a guy like Brad Childress is going up to Green Bay. You put him on an island and you paid the price because this year with all the injuries, all right, this team wasn't going to win the Super Bowl this year. We can all agree. Maybe you sniffed the playoffs.
Yeah.
The 17 team had enough talent to win the Super Bowl.
They had a chance to get back. Mike, the thing is, if you wanted to bring in Sark, which was fine, you also had to bring in a guy
Bingo.
Who had done it.
Bingo.
Okay? And that's where he failed. So now we see that Dan Quinn – again, listening. That's my belief. So I'm cool with this. Let's see where it goes. Hey, story number two happens to be Alex Anthopoulos. He came on 92.9 The Game, general manager for our Braves, talking about a variety of things today. It's online at 92.9thegame.com. Anthopoulos, what are the possibilities of signing a guy like Craig Kimbrell?
I feel confident in saying that. Any player that has been traded or any player that's available in trade, we've certainly checked in. We've most likely had discussions. We're still active on the trade front. In terms of free agents, guys like Craig and so on, I can't tell you how well-regarded and well-respected he is in this organization. If we have a chance to add an elite-level starter, elite-level bullpen guy at a contract we think makes sense and works for us with the rest of our team, we're going to do it.
Now, you know, you got a lot of guys still out there. You and I were talking off the air. It is interesting how spring training – everybody was in place. Heck, before Christmas, Carl, you generally knew what your lineup was going to look like.
Yep.
As a kid, you could see where all the trays were going down and Hot Stove League and all that. Are we going to be signing guys in, like, February? Because, I mean, here we are. You got 6 weeks before pitchers and catchers report, and we've got a bunch of holes to fill, certainly in the bullpen. I still want Bryce Harper. A lot of guys say that's a pipe dream. The Phillies remain the leading candidate for him, and he hasn't signed. How is it that Bryce Harper hasn't signed? Here we are in 2019 already.
Yeah, it's, we say there's no collusion. And listen, you can't prove that. But it is weird. You don't think teams know what the going rate is for Bryce Harper? I mean, Scott Boras, he's been doing this forever. He's talked to everybody. He knows everybody. They know what the rate is, but nobody's pulled the trigger yet. Mm. What about Machado?
Two of the biggest names out there. Two guys. How many times can you find two guys, position players, give you the 30 home runs, 100 RBIs? You know, I know Bryce Harper had a funky start to the season, but he was over 300 in the second half.
He's a stud. I don't care what anybody says.
I got Braves fans coming at me. Oh, we don't want him here. No, why would you want a guy that could just solidify the lineup and there'd be no holes and you'd be ready to rock for, however long in the contract, 5, 6, 10 years, whatever.
No, he's a dude. Hey, here's Alex Anthopoulos talking about Dansby, because remember, Dansby missed the playoffs, guys. What is his injury update status?
Swanson had the issue with his wrist. He is back feeling great. He's at 85% strength, I think, is the last report that I got. I'm going to swing a bat, I believe, 3 to 8 days a week. The amazing part about what happened was he had a piece of, I guess you'd say, cartilage or so on in his wrist, and he pretty much played with it 5 months out of the year. And, he went from 6 home runs to 14 home runs, played great defense, and in my mind, in our minds, we're thinking, wow, he just kind of battled through it and fought through it. Now, with complete health, how much more upside is there for his bat? I don't want to put too much on him, but we're excited about that.
Okay. We've said this all along. Dansby has to be a Gold Glove fielder. And if you're going to hit what he hit last season, that's the criteria, Mike. You cannot be a guy that doesn't make plays in the field and hit where he hit. We will see. And I hope he comes back. I hope he's ready to roll. I really do.
Yeah, man, the Braves, we know they've got money. We know that Liberty Media's got money, Carl. They're spending zillions of dollars around the world. At Formula One, it's a zillion-dollar holding company. I mean, you could do it. Nobody wants to hear about the debt they're carrying with the battery, although that does exist, and everyone does operate under their own budget. But it has been a little, aside from Josh Donaldson, it's been very underwhelming this offseason.
Yeah. It is Dukes and Bell, guys. Story number three has to do with Kyler Murray. It's leading a lot of headlines simply because you win the Heisman. You're multi-talented like he is, but you already have a deal on the table where you've been drafted in Major League Baseball by the A's, and now, I think I want to go play football. Everybody was going crazy today, Mike. Like, why would he do this? The kid is dumb, blah, blah, blah. Whoa, whoa, whoa. He can make a lot of money in the NFL as a quarterback. Okay?
I mean, he's got just shy of $5 million from the A's. He'd give that back, but if he goes anywhere in the first round, he'll make more than that. So, and you've also got, guys, the 4 years that are guaranteed, and then the club has got that fifth-year option, like we've been talking about with Vic Beasley. So, what the Bucs are having to deal with Jameis, for instance. Just a matter of how high he would go. Got to convince guys that he wants to be a football player. And you'll hear the conversation coming up with Bruce Feldman from Fox about, it's not about the arm strength, but it's about the size of the guy. Can he take those hits in the NFL?
Yeah, it is a valid point. I just want you to hear Cliff Kingsbury, because we've been playing this all day, and it's just interesting in a small world to see how things play out. At the time when Kingsbury said this, he's at Texas Tech. They're playing Oklahoma. And, you just kind of went, oh, that's a nice compliment. Now he's the head coach of the Cardinals, and you go, would he pull the trigger and maybe do this?
Kyler is, he's a freak, man. Purdy's a really good young player, and he's going to be a tremendous player, but Kyler is a freak. And I've followed him since he was a sophomore in high school, and just think the world of him and what he can do on a football field. And I've never seen one better in high school, and he's starting to show it now at the college level. And I don't have enough good things to say about him. He's phenomenal. I've never seen him have a poor outing, not one, which at quarterbacks it's impossible to do, but he's done it. And I'd take him with the first pick of the draft if I could. I know he's signed up to play baseball, but he is a dominant football player, and I would take him with the first pick.
Oh, Cliff, you can take him with the first pick. Okay, maybe not. I think his general manager and the owner might have something to say about
that. Well, the Cardinals
that.
Apparently today told the Fox Sports Arizona that they're not going to trade Josh Rosen.
Whatever.
You can still find a team that won't take him. I mean, he's got a way to go. He's not even close to. Now, granted, you could argue, Carl, we saw him here in Arizona. There's a lot of issues on that team on both sides of the ball. But, man, there was some unbelievable talent. If you did wind up with Kyler Murray, the talent that was on the draft after Rosen got picked, man, Minkah Fitzpatrick, Jalen Ramsey, there's a bunch of studs, man.
You wouldn't tell other NFL teams if you were going to trade Josh Rosen right now anyway. Why would you?
Yeah, you're going to play some poker there.
You're playing your hand. I'm not putting anything past Arizona. You've got some flexibility there, Mike, if you wanted to flip Rosen for some picks, if that's the guy you wanted to go after. We will see where that goes, guys. It is Dukes and Bell. Hey, coming up, you will get a chance to hear Bruce Feldman. Right now, though, let's give you a chance to win some money.
Now it's time to reveal our national signing bonus code word. The code word is...
Yeah, some people would say we have no filter. Filter is the word. F-I-L-T-E-R. Text it to 72881. That's 72881. Speaking of filter, we were talking about Tim Tebow and that whole marriage thing today where he proposed, if you didn't hear about it.
Right. You're saying a lot of people didn't have a filter on Twitter?
Yeah, because people were going in on Tebow basically about what they feel like he's lied about, which, listen, it's unfair.
No, I don't know about that.
I don't know what the guy's done.
Look, I mean, the guy, he's a beacon.
So you think he's a
he's
V?
He's an inspiration.
You think he's a V?
I could care less.
See, that's what I'm talking about.
All I know is when he's married, he will be the best husband ever. So, very excited. And Florida Gator fans, you can count on that.
Did you notice I used the V word and I didn't say it? That's filter, Mike. That's a filter.
You used a filter, 72881. Some would say we need a truth or fake news filter on who the hell's going to be the Georgia OC. Your chance to win $1,000, last shot filter. Send it now, man.
Hey, coming up, some more college football talk on the way with one of the best guys to do it, Bruce Feldman, next. Get it on. It is Dukes and Bell. We wanted to get a guy on to talk some college football and knows his stuff. He is, of course, a reporter for Fox Sports, FS1, a writer for The Athletic as well. If you don't follow him on Twitter, do so. Bruce Feldman joining us. It's Bruce Feldman, CFB. And Bruce, let's start with the news of Kyler Murray, because Mike and I started the show talking about this, and a lot of people are going, oh, the kid's making the wrong decision. First and foremost, we don't even know where he is projected, or do we? Is this a top 10 pick in this year's draft?
That would surprise me if he went that high. Obviously, a lot of people are reacting to a video from a couple of months ago of Cliff Kingsbury, the new Cardinals coach, talking about him if he had the first round pick, the first overall pick. I mean, who thought that scenario would play out that way? But let's keep in mind that sometimes coaches, college coaches, say a lot of hyperbole when they're about to face somebody. It's a lot different than the place that just hired them, investing a fortune in a guy like that and putting a precious number one overall pick on Kyler Murray. I think I could see somebody drafting him somewhere in the first round. The part that would surprise me is if he went with the first overall pick. Yes, he followed up Baker Mayfield in that Lincoln Riley system. But I think that as talented as he is, as talented as Murray is, there's a couple of things that I think need to be pointed out. One, unlike Baker Mayfield, he only really played one season. We don't have a huge amount of, a huge body of work here, whereas Baker Mayfield played three seasons, at least, in the Big 12 at Oklahoma and even at Texas Tech, whereas Murray played just a little bit at A&M and then a little bit as a backup before breaking out this year. The other thing is, and people are talking about how, you don't need to be 6'3 or 6'4 to be an NFL quarterback anymore, and certainly Mayfield went first overall, proved that. But the difference between Mayfield, and I would say also put Russell Wilson in this, is you had guys who are thick, almost built like running backs, especially Russell Wilson, whereas Kyler Murray's not only short, but he's also small, and I think there's probably will be some concerns about his durability at maybe 5'9 and a half, 5'10, maybe 185, 190 pounds. I mean, he's not as big a guy. And so I think I'll be surprised if he goes number one overall. I think that he's intriguing. But again, to me, I would look at a guy like Dwayne Haskins, who has a big arm, 6'3", 225, hasn't also played a ton,
right,
but is much bigger in stature and I think looks like what you're expecting, a first overall, a top five quarterback prospect to look like.
It's Bruce Feldman with us here, guys, on the WadeFord.com hotline. I mean, Drew Locke has got all the prototypical size and arm strength you want, but he's never really won anything impressive for Missouri. So getting back to Kyler Murray, does he go to he's going to have to wow some general managers at the combine?
Yeah, I mean, I think it would even not just be at the combine. I think it would be in the interview process and feel like, okay, this is the guy we believe can be a franchise-changing quarterback. Because that's what you're talking about if you're taking a guy in the top five. It's one thing to take somebody, late in the first round. It's another thing to really, invest that way. as opposed to trading out that pick. I mean, Drew Lock put up big numbers. It's worth noting that he's played in a bunch of different systems. I mean, he's a really good all-around athlete. I think people maybe don't realize that this was a high-level Division I basketball recruit as well. To me, Haskins is clearly the top guy. His arm is terrific. He anticipates well, makes every kind of throw. He hasn't played as much as Drew Lock, but I think he would be a very desirable pick if a team is looking for a quarterback. After that, I feel like it's a lot more of a crapshoot, whether it's Drew Lock or a guy like Jarrett Stidham, who's talented but played in a sputtering offense at Auburn. Will Greer, who I think is good. I'm not sure if anyone looks at him as a great first-round talent. And then obviously, you put Kyler Murray in there, who's kind of a more of a wild card because of his physical size and also because of the baseball part of it with him with that contract with the A's.
Bruce, a couple of weeks ago, I read a tweet from Tate Martell, formerly of Ohio State, that read, it was one of those subtweets, Bruce. You know what I'm talking about. It said something to the effect of, don't swing and miss, especially your second time around. And everybody down here in Georgia went, oh, he's talking about Justin. And now Justin's on his way to Ohio State. Tate Martell now is in the portal. What do you make of this story today? Because for us, we said Justin Fields doesn't go to Ohio State without reassurances that he's going to play.
Yeah, look, I think one thing is a little subplot into that is Justin Fields, one of the private quarterback coaches he worked with this offseason was Quincy Avery, who's an Atlantic guy, who also had Deshaun Watson in that group, and the other guy he had in there was Dwayne Haskins. And so I think Justin Fields had a really good read on what was going on in Ohio State through his relationship with Dwayne Haskins and how that dynamic was going to work, as well as, what's it like to play for Ryan Day as a quarterback. And so I think he kind of, had some really good intel on that. Tate Martell is a guy who is a talented dual threat quarterback. He's not the tallest guy in the world, but he'd also bounced around in the recruiting process. And by all accounts, he really liked the recruiting process. And I think he was going to be a challenge for probably somebody, just because there are certain kids who come up in this kind of five-star recruiting environment who I think you see them commit and decommit and kind of, it doesn't mean they're bad people or anything like that. It seems like the focus gets kind of scattershot, and it, also in the social media, realm of this part, as you said, I mean, I don't want to say it came back to bite Tate Martell, but people are holding up his tweets and his words from before and going, hey, this is, this doesn't line up with where you want to be or what's a team going to get going forward. So it's a very curious dynamic that it kind of has come full circle or done a 180 in less than like 3 weeks. I mean, it's just kind of, I don't know, it's kind of emblematic of what I think is this little five-star subculture that you get attached to sometimes in recruiting. And it's probably even more of a head-scratcher for coaches when it involves a quarterback who's got to be the face of the program. And I don't doubt that Tate Martell will have a lot of suitors going forward. I mean, he is talented, but I think there's going to be some other parts of this that may give people a lot of pause if you're bringing them on your program and expect them to be a leader and where that goes going forward.
From FS1 guys and also with The Athletic, it's Bruce Feldman with us here on Dukes and Bell. Follow him at Bruce Feldman CFB on Twitter as we're talking about what's essentially now college football free agency with the transfers. Hey, bringing it back to Georgia, Chaney goes up to Tennessee. He had signed a contract extension that was kept quiet. James Coley is the odds-on favorite to be the OC. What do you make of what Georgia's doing with the reshuffle?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I thought Chaney did a really nice job. His relationship with the O-line coach there, Sam Pittman, I think was integral in their success. And, if I'm a Tennessee fan, I'm happy with that hire. I know Chaney had been there before under Lane Kiffin and stayed on longer. He's a reliable, good, offensive mind who's developed some good players. The part that I don't know what Georgia's going to do is you have two coordinator jobs open. There's a lot of talent around there. I'm interested to see what Kirby Smart does there, because on the offensive side of the ball, you have some places that have – some big offensive coordinator vacancies around too. And so I think you're going to see some people have to roll the dice on guys who may not have never been play callers, but, in the interview process, people feel confident about them. So, you know, this is – it's not just Georgia who has an open OC job. Miami's one. There's a few others I heard that are looking that may not, quote-unquote, be open. So it's going to be an interesting case of musical chairs, I think, over the next, you know, week or two.
Bruce, guys ask me the question all the time about Brent Venables at Clemson. Why isn't he trying to be a head coach? And I always say, well, he makes head coaching money.
Right.
And he's in a really good spot. Are you surprised that he has not left yet? And do you expect him to now that they won another national championship?
I don't miss his – I mean, his son plays for him now there. And I think that he's been pretty upfront about – I think he has a good read on the situation of he likes working for Dabo Swinney. He likes the culture that they have there. Obviously, it's working at an extremely high level. As you said, he's making head coach money. It's going to take a lot. I think it's quite honestly going to take the perfect situation to get him to leave. I mean, he had the opportunity to go be the head coach at his alma mater, K-State. From what I understand, he didn't. He could have had that. He didn't want it. He could have probably gotten to work for one of his best friends, who's the AD at Texas Tech. He didn't want that either. I think he's going to be really, really choosy. I mean, perhaps if Lincoln Riley down the road decides to go be an NFL head coach, I could think Joe Castiglione, the AD, would have to give Brent Venables a lot of consideration about bringing him back to Oklahoma. But short of a huge job like that, I'm not sure he's going to just take some other job that a lot of people think would be a good first-time job. I think his perspective on it's different, and it's hard to knock. I mean, you know, I talked to him immediately after the game. He did not look like a guy who had thoughts on being someplace else. He's really comfortable in the moment, and I think that, you know, for certain guys, and it's rare, I think they put the premium on what their situation is over just the end game of being a college football head coach anywhere and just getting their foot in the door.
Bruce Feldman with his guys from Fox Sports 1 and the Athletic, breaking down college football. It looks like Clemson's world, Bruce, and we're all living in it here. Florida State went and got Kendall Briles to be the OC, so they're turning it around. Manny Diaz in Miami. Virginia Tech still just not really doing much anything special. Who's going to step up in the ACC and challenge Clemson anytime soon?
Oof. You know, if it's not Florida State, I don't know who it could be, because I think the gap between Clemson and everybody else just keeps widening. And if you don't think that recruits, and not just kids who are in 2019 class, if younger recruits didn't look at what they saw, Alabama getting blown off the field by Clemson like that, and all those young players around. I mean, look, all the guys who scored touchdowns in the game, both offensively and defensively for Clemson, are freshmen or sophomores. They're all coming back. So that's a scary thought, I think, with the rest of the ACC. Miami's got right now a real transformation. I mean, Manny Diaz is back, but they got to get the offensive side of the ball fixed. They got to get some momentum back in recruiting. At Florida State, I think Willie Taggart has a really good staff of recruiters, but he took over a situation there with Jimbo Fisher. People forget that they barely made a bowl game last year. So it wasn't going to be a quick fix. I think it's going to take some time. And then you look at the rest of the league, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's not a lot to get too excited about. Virginia had a nice finish of the season, but, you know, you look at that. I mean, Jeff Collins at Georgia Tech has a I don't know if I would call it a massive rebuild, but it's just – a shift that's so significant going from the way Paul Johnson ran things to the way Jeff Collins is going to run it. So I think it's going to be Clemson's for a while, and I just don't know who is the next team that looks like it could make a run at being a top 10 team consistently. My guess is it's Florida State, but they're a long way away from that right now.
Bruce, great information as always, man. Check him out. Read his stuff. Guys, he does a terrific job of covering college football for various outlets, including The Athletic. Bruce Feldman, we appreciate your time today. Thanks again.
My pleasure. Thank you, guys.
There he is, guys. Great college information. Hey, coming up, we got our game winner tonight, Mike Bell.
It's about love, Carl. How did you get engaged? Was it something fancy schmancy, or did you just simply sit there at the Shoney's, you got on one knee, and you popped the ring? How'd you get engaged, man? Do you go crazy? Apparently, I went over the top, according to Squidbilly and everybody else here on the show. 404-741-0929. How did you pop the question? And did she say yes?
His question.
We got in the discussion about love today because apparently Tim Tebow got engaged to a former Miss America or Miss Universe, was it, Squid? Yeah, good.
Miss Universe.
Nice job, Timmy. So, and then Carl and I got on the subject of talking about how staged the process can be when the photographers jump out, or do they not jump out, and how does it make it spontaneous when your fiance sees you with 10 people?
I see this more and more with folks, and listen, like Mike said, to each his own, right? But you can't tell me, I was so shocked and surprised when he asked me.
I was so shocked and surprised whenever I had done my makeup at Macy's counter, and I had the HD cameras and yada, yada, yada.
You've got photographers at the table documenting every moment. And I saw these pictures with Tebow, and I was like, come on.
Now, in hindsight, I wish I had a professional photographer when I popped the question because I had a 10-year-old kid from L.A. holding my phone.
Yeah, but see, that's the deal. I think some people say, you know what, Dukes? We want to document everything in our lives.
Or maybe you do it, and then you reenact it.
Okay.
I don't know. I'll figure it out. I'll see what the guys have
either.
To say. And by the way, ladies, you're always open to join the party.
Yes, how did you get asked?
How did you get engaged, pal? You're on the radio. What you got?
I've done it twice. And both times they asked me.
That's Jeremiah. Our man. And he just dropped the mic. Jeremiah just hung up. That's our man. We believe somewhere out near Villa Rica, we've been told. Hey, man, you're on the radio, bro. How'd you get engaged?
I'm so damn good.
What do you got, man?
Yeah. I went over to Stuckey's up there by Shore, Alabama. Bet on some greyhounds in Victory Land. And got down on one knee, popped the question, and Chuck Oliver came out.
All right.
Oh, come on. We can let that go. You guys, no sense of humor whatsoever.
No, I got a sense of humor. I don't need another guy.
All right, fine. Hey, man, you're on the radio, bro. How did you get engaged?
Although it was funny. Hey, man.
Hey, man.
What's going on?
I flew out to the Grand Canyon.
I can't believe how she wouldn't say yes when you approached her on the phone. You're on the radio, pal. We got to get rid of that. Will you get a good phone? And again, Carl, I need that 3 inches from your pie hole. Don't be like,
hey, Mike, Carl's going on here, dude.
What'd you say?
You're on the radio, bro. How'd you get engaged?
What's happening, Chief?
Hey, Chief.
Look here, Chief. This is a true story now. So, you know, give me a break. It's a true story.
All right.
I'm very romantic. When I asked my wife to marry me, we ate some Spam. We had some sour cream Pringles, some, you know, pears, and some Kool-Aid. And she looked at me and she said, as long as you keep the Kool-Aid coming, Chief, we can get married. But don't ever bring me no haterade.
Mm-hmm. You're on the radio, pal. Hey. How'd you get engaged?
Hey, man.
Hey, man.
I remember it like it was yesterday, man. It was at Piedmont Park. It was July 1998. I come up. We had been dating for a while. I walk up. She had this secret picnic prepared. I walked up. She looked me dead in the eye and said, what's happening, Chief?
See, it's nice when they all line up where the one guy who takes shots at the other guy are right there in sequence on lines 5 and 6.
And we had no idea because these are random, by
right
the way.
On. Hey, man, you're on the radio, bro. How did you get engaged?
I was down at Universal Studios, Florida, on the Jaws ride. And as soon as Jaws popped out of the water, I popped a question to her. She throwed me out of the water and tried to throw me to the shark.
I got you. Yeah. You remember that ride?
Yeah.
It's not there anymore. No. I don't think it works or it's closed or whatever, but that's cool.
Hey, man, you're on the radio, bro. I don't buy any of these stories so far. How did you get engaged? Turn down your radio, Mac. You're on the air, Montfrere. How'd you get engaged?
Hello?
Hello? Hello? I can hear you, but I can't see you. You and I had such high hopes for this one, too, today. I thought this was going to be a good one.
Well, it has the potential. It has the potential.
I know. Right now, as of 6:46, it sucks. You're on the air, pal. What do you got? How'd you get engaged?
Hey, man.
Hey, man.
Hey, we had a kid before we got married. I popped the question on first Mother's Day in front of my family and her family, and fortunately, she said yes.
Nice.
We're still
very good.
Together 17 years later.
Congratulations.
See, there you go.
That's what we were saying. Who else was there?
Right.
You know, who witnessed this? Did you do it in front of your friends? Because here's the other thing. With people taking, you know, professional photographers with them today, Mike, if you had a friend with you or friends, did you do it?
Mm-hmm.
Or were you by yourself?
Carl was on a beach. He was riding. You were wearing linen pants with no shirt, right, on that horse.
Well,
is that what it hurt?
Actually, Mike, we were at the Eiffel Tower, and the backdrop of Paris was quite impressive. Okay, that's not how I got married. That's not how I popped the question. That's not true.
Actually, how did you never told the story. How'd you do it?
How did I do it?
You're such a romantic. We'll get back to you on that in a second, Chief.
No. Here's the deal. I had books, bridal books, mm-hmm. as a gift that I gave her, and the ring was in the package with the books. And then as she went through and said, what is all this stuff? And then I asked her.
Oh, you're so sweet.
Thank you.
Hey, man, you're on the radio,
bro. You just made that up because you couldn't remember.
No, it's been a long time. It's been a long time.
Hey, man, you're on the radio, bro. How did you get engaged?
I was with my family and her family. Her father knew, but nobody else knew. I got down on one knee after dinner, proposed to her. My 9-year-old son waits 2 seconds, sticks the ring out over my shoulder and goes, bam, there it is.
that's cute. She said yes, right?
That's cute.
Yeah, 6 years later, still together.
Nice. That's awesome, man. That's really cute. That's funny. Hey, man, you're on the radio, bro. How did you get engaged?
Hey, man.
Hey, man.
My wife said, do something small, do something quiet. So what I did was we typically go to Braves games, and when you go to Braves games, it's always with all your friends. So in the middle of the Braves games with everybody around, I popped the question.
Nice.
By the way, I'm just curious, because you're the first person that I've actually talked to, you know, in these situations. Because everybody at the games are always like, oh, my God, it's so great. Was she embarrassed at all? No.
No, she was really excited. But then, of course, I put the ring on the wrong hand.
That's all right. Yeah. That's all right. You know what I mean? You're like Bobby Cox. You got to do that lefty-righty matchup. Hey, man, you're on the radio, bro. How did you get engaged? How did you get engaged, sir? You're on the radio.
Hey, man.
Hey, man.
How we got engaged was it was in 2007 at Payne College in Augusta. My wife had like an open mic situation going on in her college. Mm-hmm. Did like a night for the poem, and then I popped the question right there in front of her friends.
Nice. Everybody go, oh, you look like a rock star, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Nice. That's a way to do it, man. That's nice.
That's a nice little setup.
Nice. See, not everybody's a meathead that listens to our show. Hey, man, you're on the radio, bro. How did you get engaged?
You're going to laugh. I proposed in Walmart.
No, man. No. Spontaneity. Spontaneity. No.
Is there a reason why Walmart?
I bought the engagement ring, and I got down on one knee in the shoe department and proposed, and the manager gave us a $1,000 gift card.
Oh, okay. Nice. That doesn't stink.
No, man. Listen, I think if you guys have something in common, like Bo told the fact that, you know, they went down, I think it was the Ferris wheel.
Well, they were Talladega, and it was the third lap of the race. Everybody puts their hand up to do three, and then he put the ring on his lovely fiance's hand.
No, Mike, remember, we went to Talladega the day after we got married. True story.
They did honeymoon at Dega.
But if you have things in common, like when people, like the guy who called about going to the Braves game,
right.
If your fiance loves Braves games and you go do that, that's kind of cool.
Now, real quick, I told the story to you before on the air. I was about 10 or 11 years old, and this is the old days of the terrible Mets, kind of like how bad the Braves were in the 70s. Shea Stadium, it was like when the Diamond Vision screen first came. Might have been 1981 or 82, Carl. They put the couple on the screen. Guy pops the question. The girl starts crying and runs up the aisle.
Ooh.
The answer was no. Yeah. Now, imagine being that guy. The good news is there's only about like 2,500 people in the whole stadium.
Crazy. Hey, appreciate you guys, man, sharing that. We got on that topic because Tim Tebow got engaged. All right, guys, we'll come back. We'll clear our throats tomorrow.
I will be the best husband ever.
We're at Twin Peaks, and you're not going to believe who the Cincinnati Bengals have just hired.